This is a Dragon Blazer production, and I am the Little Boogeyman.
Coming down the aisle, it's the podcast tag team champions of the world, the Rage and Blaze Show. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Rage and Blaze Show. I'm Rage.
And I'm Blaze.
And today we're going to go back to 1993 to revisit SummerSlam.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. So before we revisit SummerSlam, we'd like to keep it a little bit in the present and talk about what's going on in today's wrestling world. And we've got kind of a big one to talk about. And that would be AEW. So anyhow, AEW last week had their Blood and Guts show. It was on TNT, regular television, wasn't even a pay-per-view. Everybody was able to see it. So first thing I noticed
except
was...
Except for the people there.
Yeah. So we'll get to that. So first thing I noticed was I was on social media, think it was maybe Facebook, and people on some wrestling sites were posting pictures of them at the AEW show. Keep in mind, this was like one of their first shows that they've really advertised. Hey, we're bringing people into the stands. We're going to do a show, and you could buy tickets to it. So people bought tickets to this, and then there's pictures being shown of people in the stands, and there's a cage, and then there's a big screen TV, like, you know, the Titantron, basically, and people are watching the wrestling show on the big screen TV. The reason behind this, and people were posting pissed off about this, because they paid to go see a wrestling show.
Right.
And they're watching it on the big screen.
I didn't pay to go to a theater to watch.
Yeah. So what had happened was AEW does their show outside. It's an outside venue. And what they do is they were doing a Blood and Guts match, a.k.a., obviously, for legal reasons, they couldn't call it an actual War Games match, because I'm sure that's WWE copyrighted, because that was a WCW event. So they couldn't call it War Games, so they called it Blood and Guts. It was the Pinnacle versus the Inner Circle, okay? And they ended up not being able to do a live show due to the fact that they don't have the ability to lower the cage. And so the only show these people got to watch live was the Blood and Guts match. That was it. The rest of the show was not live. They had to watch it on the big screen, and people were not aware of this ahead of time, and they were pissed. I heard Tony Khan did reach out and say that he would refund people for this inconvenience, but it's just the fact that something like that should have been known before you buy tickets to a live event. But but the excuse I heard was because they couldn't. Usually when WWE, or I'm assuming any wrestling promoter, does a steel cage match or a Hell in a Cell, match, and of course a War Games match is an even bigger cell because there's two wrestling rings, they lower the cage down and they keep it high above the ring before the match. And due to the fact that AEW's show is done at an outside venue, they're saying they didn't have the ability to do this. My personal opinion.
Then maybe have, I mean, I don't know what you do, but I mean, maybe have a separate ring somewhere. I don't know if you have the room for it, but
my answer to this is, number one, you have both rings set up and you work your whole show with the two rings. Maybe not the cage. I'm assuming if they can't lower it from the top, I'm assuming they brought it in with a crane, a mobile crane, right?
Right.
or they set it up, hand set it up. I don't know. One of the two. My logic is bring the people in early. Yeah, you're still pre-recording it for live television, but the live audience still gets to see the show. You bring the people in early, and you tell them there's going to be an hour intermission while we set the cage up. Or whatever, you know, the deal may be.
Or to shorten it, maybe you have half of it set up, and you only work on the one ring, and then maybe they have an intermission, and they set up the other half. That way they can, you know, have less time to build it.
Regardless.
There's ways to do it. This was not the way.
Yeah, this was not the way. And if they had Johnny Gargano on their side, he could have showed them the way. That's a NXT joke. It was very good.
I was about to
It was good.
I was about to go Star Wars.
No. There's a group called The Way on NXT. I know you, I've tried to preach this to you. You need to go watch NXT. But Johnny Gargano's group is called The Way. That's his stable. And it all stems from his little catchphrase before the group started, where he does everything the Johnny Gargano way. And it just kind of turned into that became his stable. So yeah, Johnny Gargano could have showed them The Way.
So is their theme song The Way by Fastball?
I don't believe so. But anyhow, so the point is that I just feel like if you're going to put on a live event, these are things you should have figured out before you put on a live event. You don't get there and like, hey, you know, con the fans that pay money to go see the show, and they get there and find out they only get to see one match.
This scares me. This legit scares me. And the reason why it scares me is I think WWE is better when it has competition. And doing stuff like this, and we're going to get into the rest of it, doing stuff like this could ruin your promotion. And we could be losing AEW if they keep screwing up.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, if they're going to screw around fans like this, then maybe, you know, fans aren't going to be wanting to go to these shows.
Right.
If stories like this come out.
And
so then
we have more to talk about.
Part two of our blood and guts conversation comes at the conclusion of the blood and guts match. The match itself was a pretty good match. I just want to speak on that. It was a very good match. There was a few things during the match that was kind of blundered. Like, there was still commercial breaks during the match. People, you know,
was the match?
If you ever watched a War Games, I think about an hour. If you ever watched a War Games match, they come in based off of a timer. So each individual comes in, and I'm going to say maybe every 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it is. So the timer goes off kind of like a Royal Rumble match, and the next person comes in.
Sounds to me it's kind of like an Elimination Chamber match.
It's sort of, but the way it works is a War Games match. Two guys start the match. You cannot do pinfall, submission, or any of that stuff during this time in the match. And in this actual blood and guts match, it was only submission or I quit was the only way you could win this match. There was no pinfalls. So what had happened was you have a timer, and one team gets a player in. So then it's 2-on-1, and then the timer goes off. Then it's back to 2-on-2, 3-on, you know, whatever, and so forth, so on and so forth, depending on how many competitors are in the ring. So then when every competitor is back in the ring, that is when the submission and I quit, that is when that rule applies. Well, so what had happened was there was commercial breaks, obviously, and I think TNT should have done something where this was a commercial free, but they do a thing where it's pitcher in pitcher. So you got to watch the commercial to keep watching the program because they do pitcher in pitcher. And even NXT has started doing this pitcher-in-pitcher thing also. Raw and SmackDown don't do it.
SmackDown does pitcher-in-pitcher during SmackDowns.
During commercials?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe they all do it then.
During certain matches, not like a freaking major match.
No, it's
like
not.
This.
It's not every match. It's just every so often they'll do pitcher and pitcher. Well, anyhow, they did pitcher and pitcher, and one of the wrestlers that everybody was waiting to see get into the ring had entered during one of these commercial breaks, and it kind of annoyed a lot of people online. So they had a problem with that. Some of the people who had entered during commercial breaks, people had an issue with that. But the biggest issue, and like I said, it was a very good match, was the way it ended. So MJF had Chris Jericho on the top of the cage, threatening to throw him off, similar to the way The Undertaker threw Mankind off, okay?
Yes.
So he had threatened to throw, you know, Chris Jericho off the top of the cage. So then Sammy Guevara actually said, "We give up. We quit." Because it was submission or I quit rules. He gave up. He gave up on behalf of his team to prevent him from throwing Chris Jericho off the cage. Well, MJF is probably one of the best heels out there right now.
He is great on the mic.
He is amazing. He is an amazing heel. If WWE were to ever poach him, I think he would be a superstar in WWE. I'm a real big fan of MJF.
Yeah, I like him too.
To be the dick that he is, he chose to still throw Chris Jericho off the cage. Well, I don't know if you could call it a throw. He pushed him.
Well, in fairness, us vultures want that kind of stuff to happen. So, okay. Even though we hate MJF, Jericho's the face, we watch wrestling for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So this is an exciting moment. They're going to throw a guy off the cage. So you think this is going to be awesome. So then all of a sudden, he falls, and it looks like what should have been like steel steps that he was landing on. But as he lands, the steel steps kind of bend and come up, and you can see underneath the steel part that this is just cardboard. And he lands on a crash pad.
Yes, this should have been awesome, and then a narrator came out and said, and then it was not awesome.
So you've got the announcers making this sound as brutal as can be. Oh my God, Jericho's gonna die. He just landed on them concrete steps. Oh my God, this could ruin his career. Literally making it sound like this is the death of Jericho. But then in reality, the camera zooms in and shows that the dude landed on a crash pad, and it was cardboard, painted cardboard that tried to make it look like steel steps. And the optics were just bad. So the internet is in an uproar. So then people trying to defend AEW is like, now come on, we know it's a show, we know this is pre-planned, why would you want him to actually fall on concrete or actually get hurt?
But here's the thing. Okay. Here's the thing. Okay? Yes, we know it's a show. We know that they're not actually trying to hurt them out there. But the point is it is a show. And your job is that it's like a magic trick. Think of magicians. They don't go out there showing you how the trick is done. Your job is to give the illusion that he fell onto steel steps on concrete. It's your job to trick the audience's mind into believing that this is real. And they failed. They failed miserably. You showed the trick and ruined it.
Yes. So it was done very unprofessionally on national television. AEW had their biggest crowd ever for Dynamite. I don't even know if it was technically called Dynamite. It was in the time slot of AEW Dynamite, but
yeah, it was Blood and Guts.
They called it Blood
and Guts.
They've
done this before, so, done televised pay-per-views, essentially.
So anyhow, so Shayna Baszler gets on Twitter after people are pretty much saying, Well, if you watch a horror movie and somebody gets stabbed and killed, do you really want them to stab them and kill them? Or, you know, you want people to really get hurt and die?
No, so Shayna, but guess what happens in those horror movies? You don't see how it's done.
Okay, so here's Shayna Baszler's response on Twitter to these critics trying to defend AEW. And so here it goes. She says, "We don't actually want a village to be burned by a dragon in Game of Thrones. If they did that, that would be really bad. But if the special effects would have been garbage, it would have sucked also, and everyone would have said so." So basically, Shayna Baszler is saying exactly what you just said about a horror movie, is that we don't want people to get hurt, but we also don't want to see how you are protecting them also. You have to not show us that the guy's landing on a crash pad. You have to hide it better, whether it be through camera angles or whatnot. And then the crowd at the, I think it's called Daily Place is where they do their show. The crowd was booing enormously.
Oh, booing terribly.
And the reality is was they booing because it looked that bad? Or was they booing because MJF is that big of a dick? Or a combination of the two? Hard to say, but they were
probably
booing.
A combination of both.
They were booing pretty loudly.
And here's the thing. They showed far away camera angles, and it didn't look bad from far away. And if you can't make that crash look good up close, you should have just only shown far away shots.
Yeah, because the zoomed in shot really
ruined the illusion.
Really looked bad, really was laughable. And
you showed us how the trick is done, and now it's ruined.
As a result, their viewership for the following week on AEW Dynamite plummeted really bad. So, I mean, they lost tons of viewers. So you're talking about a show that got all this hype, and everybody was talking about it and was all excited about it. You piss off the live fans with what you did with the not giving them a heads up that they were only going to get to watch one match live. And then you piss off the viewers because you're like, this looked like shit. And the sad thing is the rest of the match, and really the rest of that show, was pretty damn good.
The rest of the show is good for the viewers that watched it on TV and not the people that got stuck watching it on the big screen instead of actually seeing it live.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to be seeing.
So I mean, it was one of those classic cases of you watch a movie for 2.5 hours, and you're thinking the movie's okay, it's a pretty good movie, and you're like, maybe the ending will really tie everything together, and then the ending sucks, and you're like, what the fuck did I just sit through? So that's kind of the way I think people felt, was like, this match looked really, really good, and then the ending and the climax, and then they just kind of walked away sour from it, because they're like, this was shit.
It's like a bad M. Night Shyamalan movie. Good premise, and then the twist happens and ruins it all.
Yeah. So anyhow, we wanted to talk about that. And then the following week, like I said, ratings declined on AEW Dynamite the following week. And then another stunt they did, which wasn't a bad stunt, but a lot of people were making fun of it online also. I don't think it was too bad, but they kind of rehashed an idea that happened 20 years ago.
Maybe they thought we wouldn't remember.
Yeah, the Inner Circle comes out in like a buggy thing, like a truck buggy, and they're supposed to be hiding the fact that they're supposed to be playing off that Chris Jericho's hurt, but then you see Chris Jericho behind Sammy Guevara trying to like duck his head. So you already ruined the secret that Chris Jericho was in the back of the truck because the camera freaking caught him. So once again, maybe it's just cameramen at AEW freaking suck. I don't know what's going on at AEW's production team, but the cameramen are ruining secrets of the business or whatever. But you could see Chris Jericho kind of poking his head behind Sammy Guevara. So I'm kind of face
well, part
palms.
Of that's Chris Jericho's fault. He shouldn't be.
Well, maybe it was, but the camera's not supposed to be, showing a certain angle, whatever. So anyhow, you already kind of ruined that surprise. Then Chris Jericho pops up, and then they start shooting, the side of the truck said, a little bit of the bubbly, because that's, Jericho's thing, the bubbly. So instead of beer, or instead of Kurt Angle's milk, they shot bubbly at the Pinnacle. And it's just an idea that we've already seen before years ago in WWE. But, I mean, whatever.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is this terrible or genius? And this is why I ask. Do you think because of all the heat they got for Blood and Guts and how badly they screwed that up, maybe they thought, hey, we're going to rehash an old idea and cause the internet to make comments on that and maybe take the focus away from the screw up they did at Blood and Guts and have them say, well, they just rehashed an old idea, where it's a little less, you know what I'm saying here?
I get what you're saying. Kind of take the heat off that Blood and
Guts
ball.
Take the heat off the Blood and Guts by trying to get people to mention, oh, you just stole an old Stone Cold idea. But it's an idea we enjoyed in the past, so maybe it won't be as harsh.
I mean, I guess they could be that smart that they thought it that far through.
I'm going to go with no, but that's probably not. I'm probably giving them too much credit, but it just dawned on me. I was like, I wonder if maybe this just was a way to draw heat away from how badly they screwed up. Because they knew that they had to know they screwed up. They had to know how badly they screwed up with the showing the. And the whole thing about them showing being stuck only paying for only one live match. That's terrible. But I think for me, showing the magic trick is even a worse offense. Quite frankly.
Yeah, I agree. It was just bad for wrestling. I mean, it's one of those things like we all that watch it at this point, we all know better. We know it's a show. We know it's pre-planned. But sometimes they do stunts that I turn and look at my wife or I turn and look at my brother while watching it and I say, holy shit, like that dude's fucking dead. I mean, there is times that things happen in wrestling that I'm sitting there questioning, why would he let that guy do that to him unless they did it in a way to protect him? But that dude looks fucking dead to me. And that's what you want when you're watching wrestling. Definitely when you're watching something hardcore, when it's matches like that, you really want to know, what's going, you want to watch it and just feel like you're watching it and it feels real to you.
Exactly. It's like the reason why movies like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street have gone past the time and trauma films. Not so much, because trauma films aren't great, the greatest special effects, where Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, they look real.
Nightmare on Elm Street looks real to you?
The death scenes, yeah.
I mean, really?
I'm not saying it's a realistic movie, okay? I realize that we're talking about a dream killer and everything like that. But the effects make it look like this could happen. The deaths look good.
No, you're right. I watched Freddy Krueger once take somebody's veins and turn them into a puppet. I mean, I believe that's possible.
In the world of that movie, it is.
Anyhow, moving on. So anyhow, no, it's just you want the effect to look good. You want to believe in the product. You want people to come back for more. And too many times, AEW has done these big, elaborate stunts, and then it just duds. They're not working out. I remember, I can't remember who Moxley was fighting, but there was like a barbed wire explosion match, and the big explosion at the end of the match happened, and it was like sparklers. So they got made fun of for that, where I think this is 10 times worse, because if those explosions didn't go off properly, I think that's more forgivable that, okay, something went wrong, the explosions didn't blow up properly. But the way they did the Jericho fall, you had to know what was going to happen when he fell. You didn't think that cardboard was just going to stay flat, right? Here's an idea. Make sure it was taped down enough to where it wouldn't come apart like that. Or, so where it would look like he landed on it. And even though there's a crash pad underneath that cardboard, I'm just saying.
Or another idea is make the bottom of the cardboard look like the same as the top. And when it crashes, it still looks like metal.
Exactly. So, anyhow, we're going to go ahead and move on. We're going to go and go back in time to SummerSlam 1993. But, hey, if you want to continue this conversation, tell us what you think about the AEW Blood and Guts show, or maybe talk about the bubbly little, the spraying of the bubbly on Dynamite the following week. Love to hear your guys' opinions. But, I mean, in my opinion, it was bad for business. I just didn't think it was very good. But we're going to go ahead and move on, and this is 1993 SummerSlam. Okay, so the first match of SummerSlam 1993 is Razor Ramon, who is a face now, versus the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, which I'd like to point out, this is probably the first time we've seen DiBiase in a long time in singles competition.
Yeah, that's true. He's been with IRS for the last few pay-per-views.
Yeah, so I don't know if Money Inc. has split or if this is just a singles match. I don't know what's going on here. They didn't really give us any details on a feud here or anything like that. I do know Razor Ramon has now gone face, but other than that, we don't really know the details on why this match is taking place. I'll definitely look into that and see what's going on here.
Yeah.
The match itself was pretty good. I thought it was a well-rounded match. It just wasn't, it didn't really jump off the screen or nothing like that. But it was definitely a well-done match. No botches, no nothing like that. There wasn't any really huge high spots, any big craziness. But we did get to see, and this is shocking, have we seen Razor Ramon actually complete a Razor's Edge the whole time we've seen him? Because I feel like every time it gets countered or somebody does something and it never happens, he sets it up. But he never officially does it. Maybe,
I think we did
maybe the first time. Yeah. Maybe the first match we saw Razor Ramon. But we finally get to see him execute the Razor's Edge on Ted DiBiase. So it was just kind of funny that I was happy and surprised about it, because you would have thought we've seen it over and over again. But I think we've only seen it once on our podcast.
I think you're right.
So due to that fact, I'm going to give this 3.5 Razor's Edge. Which is actually more Razor's Edge than I think we've seen on our podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a... I guess 3 Razor Edge as well. There wasn't really anything that stood out from this match. It was fine. 2 wrestlers that I enjoy. I love Million Dollar Man. I don't feel like we got as much overselling that we normally get from Million Dollar Man in this match, which was kind of disappointing. But it was all right. I mean, it wasn't bad, so I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay. Okay, so the next match we have on the card is for the WWF Tag Team Championships. It is the champions, the Steiner Brothers, Rick and Scott Steiner, versus the Heavenly Bodies, Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard, and they have James E. Cornette coming out with them as their manager. I don't know. I've really, really, really enjoyed most of the Steiner brother matches that we have seen. This one was just okay to me with a good finish. I thought the match was just all right. But I thought the finish was really good. It looked like Scott Steiner killed another guy. So
that's it. And there was a really cool, back body drop that, Rick Steiner did right before.
Yeah.
Scott Steiner.
Yeah. It was brutal. Murder. Yeah. It was pretty brutal.
Really cool.
There was two moves that make me
not just the final move.
Yeah.
The ending, there was a lot of action in the ending. I didn't know, Jimmy Ray was a wrestler. I remember his song. Are you Jimmy Ray? Are you? Rage is kind of giving me. Who wants to know about me?
So anyhow, there is two moves in this match. Like you said, a Rick Steiner belly to belly suplex and a Scott Steiner Frankensteiner. And both moves look like we'll probably never see the heavenly bodies again.
Wait.
Because I think their necks are probably dead. And I think both moves put them in more jeopardy than Jericho was on AEW Blind Guts. So
definitely.
So yeah, I would give this,
Is it a Frankensteiner when it's in the middle of the ring?
I think it's,
cause I thought the Frankensteiner was the top rope.
I don't know.
Did he call it both ways?
I thought that is just called a Frankensteiner, but I don't know. Regardless, I'm giving this match 3 drops on its head.
All right. I'm going to give this, once again, I thought this was a decent match, but like you said, it wasn't super great until the end.
And it was pretty short.
And it was kind of short.
Very short, actually.
So, I'm going to give this 2.5, Burger Kings.
Burger Kings.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention that out in the crowd, they were showing the crowd, and a lot of people are holding up ugly-ass Michigan hats, because the Steiner brothers are from Michigan. And, but one of the guys outside the ring, they had some people out there wearing Burger King crowns, which if you remember from our last podcast, Bret Hart tells Jerry the King Lawler that he might be the Burger King. So now the fans are out there wearing Burger King crowns, and I appreciate it. I just appreciate it. And, I couldn't think of a better idea, so I went with what I saw in the audience.
I personally think you should have saved the Burger King score for, I think we're getting a Bret Hart versus Jimmy Lawler match later.
I'm hoping there's something better to talk about, but yeah.
But hey, you know, you do.
Okay, let's switch it. 2.5 Frankensteiners ?
I suppose you can do that, but I think it's going to cheapen the Burger King score already.
We'll see. I'll try to come up with some better for that.
So I think you should probably put more work into your thinking than AEW does on their stunts. I normally do, actually.
So in fairness.
So in all fairness, we are going to probably rib them for the rest of the show. It just feels
ribs are McDonald's.
Rib is something the wrestlers do to one another.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
So it is like,
but the McRib is McDonald's. It doesn't fit the Burger King thing. I'm just saying.
On to the next match. Okay, so before the next match, we get a backstage interview with HBK and Diesel. And, basically they're talking about, we're going to settle this once and for all. Who is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time? Shawn Michaels or Mr. Perfect? And, he said the score will be settled tonight. So we get out there, Shawn comes out, Mr. Perfect comes out, and this match was fantastic. I thought this was a great match. Unfortunately, though, I think this match could have been better than it was. They really were doing something with Shawn where I think they felt like he couldn't win a match clean. He had to win all his matches in some kind of dirty fashion. But the problem with this match is it ended in a countout. I mean, that just drives me nuts, but that's how the match ends. He even has one of the guys running out to him and asking him, are you okay with the way this match ended? You know, can you really settle and say that you're the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time based off the way this match ended? And HBK basically said, I've just proved my point, you know, I've said all that I need to say, and then kind of walks out with the title.
He said the man with the title is the greatest Intercontinental Championship.
Right. Champion. So basically, in a nutshell, the match was great. Unfortunately, just the way it ended was just kind of, you know, I guess I just hate when the match ends in a count out. But it is what it is. It's like they felt like back then Sean couldn't win a match clean. They had to keep doing this. Something happens in every one of Sean's matches to where he don't win these matches clean.
He won it just fine clean. He won with a count out. What do you want from him? Clearly, it's clean.
He had a little help from Diesel out there, which, once again, I mean, this is like two of my favorite superstars of all time.
Oh, so you don't like the Wonder Years? Have a little help from our friends.
So, I don't know. I thought there was a lot of really, really good spots in this match. I thought there was a drop kick that almost looked like Mr. Perfect was in, like, slow motion in midair.
Oh, yeah.
And nailed it on Sean.
Such a pun intended.
Perfectly. It was like one of the most beautiful drop kicks I think I've ever seen. And it was just a great, great match. Had it not been for the way it ended, I would have gave it a higher score. But for now, I'm going to give this 4 countouts.
I think I am not nearly... How many did you give it?
4.
4. Really? Wow. All that bashing, and you give it a 4.
No, I'm okay. Not bashing the match itself. I'm bashing the end.
I know what you're bashing.
Okay.
See, I feel a little differently about this. I recognize that, you know, wrestling is a storytelling, and this told the story they wanted to tell. Sean has an enforcer. What did you think was going to happen? The enforcer is going to get involved. Sean is a heel. This is what happens when you are a heel, especially when you have a big guy like Diesel on the outside for you.
Oh, no. Let me correct any misconception of what I feel of this match. I have no problem with Diesel getting involved. I just would have rather seen it end in a pinfall or submission.
So, essentially, what you wish happened is Diesel gets involved.
Throws him back in the ring.
But doesn't get caught.
Throws him back in the ring.
I understand what
you're
saying.
Gives Sean a finishing move.
But I feel like...
And 1, 2, 3.
I feel like this is to... The way they did this was to keep Mr. Perfect strong, keep their rivalry going.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And because the whole reason he got counted out is because the referee got knocked down. And that's kind of the weird thing about the way this match ended. He got knocked down. He can't keep counting to 10. But then Diesel attacked Mr. Perfect outside of the ring and caused him to stay out there for the 10 count. But it was almost as soon as the referee got up, like he came to, it's like, I've been counting to 10 in my head this whole time. And then he rang the bell. So when he rang the bell, I thought it was a disqualification. Mr. Perfect was going to win but not get the title because I thought he had saw Diesel attack Mr. Perfect. But instead, they said it was a count out. So to me, it was just an odd ending. And I'm not a big fan of count outs to begin with. So to me, I just would prefer him to attack the guy, roll him back in the ring, and give me a more of a finish. I'm just not a fan of countouts. That's it. That's just the main thing.
See, I'm not a fan of the way they've done some of the older countouts that we've watched on this podcast, only because they don't make a big deal about it. Like, nowadays, they give the ref a mic, and he says those one, two. You get to know. I mean, he makes a big spectacle of when he's counting someone out. And a lot of these older matches have had it where they'll get counted out, and it just doesn't seem like that's what happened.
Yeah, you don't see the referee counting or making a big deal about it. And then when they ring the bell, you're kind of confused just happened. So yeah, I agree that maybe it's just the time frame in which we're watching wrestling at this moment. In 1993, they just didn't quite do some of the mannerisms they do today. And maybe that's my problem, being a future wrestling star as opposed to, 1993 wrestling star. I'm used to a certain thing. So maybe I'm guilty for that. So,
I'm a little bit more forgiving. And I hated those from the past ones we've watched. But this is my point here, is to me, this one's different. This one's different than the past ones we watched. You knew what was going on. There was shenanigans going on, and it told a story. If I don't mind a count out when it makes sense for the story that they're trying to tell. And it was clear they were telling a story that Shawn Michaels won, kept the title, yes, but it was because he couldn't do it cleanly. He's a heel, and he used his guy. So, I don't mind a count out when it's done properly. So, for me, this was a great match. The ending didn't bother me like it did you. Now, mind you, we're about to probably do the same grade, because I can kind of expect it, based on your dislike of the ending, to go lower. I'm not sure this, in my eyes, this is a 4. And this is not, 4.5. So I'm not going to go higher than you, mainly because I was expecting to go higher based on the way you were talking. But I think this is a 4 match. This is a 4. Have a little help from your friends. 4. Have a little help with your friends. So, I like it based on the story that it told. Okay? So, I didn't knock points on, but 4 is where I was going anyways. So, that's how I felt. I thought it was a good match, and because the story made sense, and I'll agree with you, it was a little weird, the way the count-out happened, that the ref went down, came back up, and still counted. I kind of understand your argument there, but other than that, I understood the story. The story made sense. The story worked for the characters and or the wrestlers involved. 4.
Okay. Okay, so the next match we have on the card is the 1-2-3 Kid versus IRS. And this storyline has been going where Razor Ramon has kind of turned face. And it's kind of been Razor Ramon and I, 1-2-3 Kid versus Money Inc. We already had one Razor Ramon versus Million Dollar Man match. And now we're having 1-2-3 Kid versus IRS. This was a decent match. Nothing bad about this match. There was a really good, believe it or not, I mean, because we just mentioned one on the last, there was a really good dropkick.
Yeah, there was. That 1-2-3 Kid. 1-2-3
Kid had done on IRS. I mean, there was a good few spots. It was okay. But it surprised me, the ending, based off the story they've been telling on Monday Night Raw. It surprised me. IRS gave him like a clothesline, and then he pinned him 1-2-3, and it kind of, it kind of ended the really odd, just quick. And the story they're telling is this underdog, 1-2-3 Kid, and then the first pay-per-view match they give him, I mean, they've kind of been
making a big deal. This is our first time seeing him, I believe.
Yeah, this is the first time on the podcast. I've been watching him on the Monday Night Raw. He's been on there. But just to see him lose just was a little shocking to me. Just based off the story they were telling.
It was clean. Yeah, it was clean. It was just...
Yeah, he didn't get screwed over. There was no shenanigans. He just lost. So it was just kind of surprised me the way this match ended. But this match was good. It was a decent match. I'd give it probably 3 late taxes.
Yeah, this match was really short. It's not a bad match, but it's also not a match that you're going to write home about. I mean, there's nothing... There was that nice drop kick, but other than that, there really wasn't much to talk about.
It was just a well-worked match. It was just fine.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Nothing jumps out at you as something that was bad. The only thing that really jumped out that was good was the drop kick. It was just... by the books. So I'm giving this 2.5. 1, 2, 3. You're out, kid.
Oh, wow. Okay, here we go. Okay, so the next match is supposed to be Jerry the King Lawler versus Bret the Hitman Hart. And before the match starts, we get an Owen Hart, and I think his name was Bruce Hart.
Bruce Hart.
And during the interview, they speak that their father had to have surgery. Their father and mother was supposed to be there tonight, but their father ended up having surgery after the verbal attacks that Jerry the King Lawler put on them during an episode of Monday Night Raw. So there was an episode of Monday Night Raw. Bret Hart had a wrestling match. I can't remember who he was wrestling during the episode. I apologize. But he was wrestling somebody, and during the wrestling match, Jerry the King Lawler went up to Bret Hart's parents and was verbally making jokes and constantly egging them on while Bret Hart was actually wrestling in this match. So Bret Hart actually leaves the match, gets counted out to go after Jerry the King Lawler, and during all this... And I don't know what's kayfabe and what's not, you know, I'm not sure what was, you know, what really happened. But based off of what Owen Hart's saying is after the verbal attacks, their dad ended up twisting his knee during this whole situation. And so even though Jerry the King Lawler never physically attacked him, they're blaming him. And it might have been real life. He twisted his knee. And they're just utilizing it for the story. Whatever the reality was. He had to have surgery, so he was not at SummerSlam to watch his son face Jerry the King Lawler. So, Jerry comes out after this interview in crutches and says that he was in a 10-car pileup, and it was this fiery accident, and that he messed his knee up, and... Even though they told him not to show up to the arena, that he needed to go to the hospital, he said, I had to be here, but the doctors won't let me wrestle. He's saying, the doctors say I can't wrestle. So I'm going to bring my court jester, Doink the Clown, and he's going to take my spot.
I feel like you're not believing Jerry the King Lawler. He is a king. He would never lie to you.
Bet you believe everything the government tells you, too, don't you? Doink the Clown comes out, throws some confetti at the crowd in a bucket, and then he picks up another bucket, and he throws water this time, no confetti, throws water at Bruce and Owen Hart. So then the match is already getting fired up because Bruce and Owen Hart try to go and attack him, and then Bret Hart attacks him. This match gets kind of out of control right away, but it was actually a very, very well physical match, and Bret Hart just had this fire lit during this match, and it was just fantastic, beating the holy hell out of Doink the Clown, to be honest with you.
A lot of little doinks being hit as well.
Yeah, he got attacked in the animal balloons. So that happened. It was just a really, really well done match. I had to, of course, Bret Hart gets the win. I think by submission.
No.
Was it by pin?
It was by disqualification because Jerry the King Lawler comes in with a crutch
and starts beating the shit
out of
Bret
the Hitman Hart.
He had the sharpshooter on.
He had the sharpshooter on.
He had the sharpshooter on Doink. Doink didn't submit. You're right. King stopped the match from him submitting. King came in, attacked him with the crutches.
It was a miracle. King's legs started feeling better after the truth happened, and you know that car pileup happened, and his leg just started feeling better.
According to Bobby the Brain Heenan, he heard that King got out of his car and saved about 25 children out of a fiery bus. During this, apparently it must have been a pretty
Bobby never lies. That's probably
so, yeah.
What happened,
Bobby the Brain must know what's going on, but
he's a hero. He's a damn hero.
So anyhow, he attacks Bret Hart. This match ends in disqualification. Bret Hart obviously tries to go after him, but in a surprise move, because back then it really didn't happen a lot with the authority figures. It's nothing like it was now, where there's almost always an authority figure on camera. Jack Tunney made a rare appearance and actually stopped King Lawler from going to the locker room or to the backstage area, and said that now that we can see that clearly your knee is fine, you have to compete in this match and you have to face Bret Hart. So they start a new match.
And
I suppose before we start the new match,
the last time
I would say I'm giving the Doink Bret Hart match 3.5 animal balloons.
I'm also going to give it 3.5 honk honk. That's the sound of his little Doink being hit over again.
I didn't know really what to say after that. Honk, honk. That was kind of weird. Okay, fine. Whatever. So we'll move on from that. So then we go to the next match, which is Jerry the King Lawler versus Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is not your typical Bret Hart match. This is more of a brawl. But we really have a lot to speak about on this match. So the match starts. They're attacking each other. Bret Hart, right in front of the referee, on the outside of the ring, whacks Jerry the King Lawler with the crutches. Clear as day, no surprise here. Jerry gets the crutches and he attacks Bret Hart right in front of the referee, no problem, whatever. So then the referee gets back into the ring because he kind of followed them outside of the ring for a little while. But he gets out of the ring and or back in the ring, and then all of a sudden you see Jerry the King Lawler choking Bret Hart with the crutches. And, like, almost like making sure the referee couldn't see him because he didn't want to get disqualified. But
it was actually kind of fun. It didn't make a lot of sense based on the fact that the ref was like, yeah, go ahead. I think the theory I have is that because they're crutches, they're not technically weapons because they're a medical usage device.
What the fuck ever. So anyhow, so the weird thing about this was that he was worried about getting disqualified for the rest of the match with these crutches. And he utilized these crutches and he played these games with the referee several times afterwards. But we're talking about just a couple minutes before this, they were whacking each other with the crutches and right in front of the referee, and it wasn't a big deal. So I was kind of curious where the rules had changed in the middle of the match. So it was a very odd thing. Almost like the referee forgot that, we can't really be whacking each other.
Is it possible all that happened before the bell rang?
I think the bell rang. They were already in the ring at some point. Anyhow, who knows?
Not before they hit each other with the crutches.
Okay, but based off that logic, he was choking them outside the ring before they got back into the ring.
Well, maybe that at that time, the ref was trying to tell him to get in the ring to start the match.
Okay, well, you're trying to make a huge explanation out of
something. I'm trying to figure this out where it's logical, okay? But I have to say that Jerry the King Lawler's antics in this match was actually really fun. Like, I enjoyed him hiding the crutch behind his back and, like, just like he's a child. Just trying to hide the toy he's not supposed to be playing with. Like, Jerry the King Lawler kind of impressed me a bit with this match. You know, I haven't really got to see a lot of Jerry the King Lawler. I've seen him, like, as a commentator, and I've seen him wrestle, like, way past his prime. But he was a fun heel in this match, I think. I think he was a fun heel in the match.
You know, not quite the same, but almost shades of Eddie Guerrero.
Just maybe
the way he was healing it up. You know what I mean? Like
I was thinking
a fun way of healing.
It reminded me of like Million Dollar Man antics, except for without a lot of the overselling, but like the please don't in the ring, and he tried to get them to shake his hand in the ring. You know, he tell the story. Now, nothing I saw showed like great wrestling from Jerry the King Lawler personally, but his storytelling in the ring was actually a lot of fun.
Right. So, yeah, anyhow, this was a lot of fun. I really, really, really enjoyed this match. It just was not your typical great wrestling, you know, technical match that
No.
you usually see Bret Hart. It was a little different. But the match ends with him putting King into a sharpshooter, and King does give up. He submits.
Pretty quick.
Pretty quickly. But Bret Hart refuses to give up on the hold.
How long was he in that hold? Like
several
minutes?
Yeah, there was, I would say 4 or 5 minutes passed. And all these referees and officials come into the ring.
Pat Patterson.
We even had Bruce Hart and Owen Hart eventually get into the ring to convince Bret Hart to remove the hold. And this went on for a real long time. But anyhow, the referee decided to reverse his decision and declare Jerry the King Lawler the winner based off of, I would assume, disqualification.
And the true king.
And they named him the true king of the WWF. So, ultimately, Bret Hart won the match, but they reversed the decision. This was a really fun match. I'm going to have to give this four crutch shots. How about that?
I was going to say four toy crutches.
Toy crutches. Fair enough.
Yeah, because Lawler looked like he was hiding a toy when he was in the ring. Kept trying to hide his little toy crutch. But I thought this was a decent match.
Yeah, I thought this was
really good.
Super fun. What did you give it then?
Four toy crutches.
Four toy crutches. So yeah, we both agree on this match. It was really fun, very good. It just a little bit different than what you usually see Bret Hart do, but just a lot more emotional and brutal, I guess. This was a fun feud. This was very entertaining.
And it had an interesting end to it as
well.
Yeah,
different than we've ever really
seen. I don't think I've ever seen someone not let go of a hold and then have the decision reversed because they refused to let go of the hold.
Right.
I think we've seen people like keep the hold for a little while, but I don't think I've ever seen a decision reversed because of that.
Yeah. So this was very different, very enjoyable, but yeah, this was a good one. Really kind of up there. Might be the match of the night. I have to weigh my decision. I gave another match a 4 earlier, so really got to think about this one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead and plug the pluggables.
All right, you can find me on the Dragon Blazer Productions on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can also find me on the Twitters on Dragon Blazer Pro. And I've been trying to push this. You know, we would like to get more views and reach out to more people. We would like some, if you have an iPhone, give us those 5 stars. Give us those 5 stars and maybe review us. Tell us what you're liking about the show. Hell, tell us what you don't like about the show. We would love to hear your voice, and, you know, we would like to improve on based on what your thoughts are.
Yeah, definitely. And if you like the show, the best way you can, you know, help us out to help grow the show is to share the show also.
Absolutely.
Definitely share it with your friends, share it on your social media. We greatly would appreciate it. But yeah, definitely, that's the best way you can tell us how you like the show. You can also find us on Facebook at the Rage and Blaze Show. You can find us on Twitter at the Rage and Blaze Show. And, you can find me at, or no, I'm sorry, Instagram at the Rage and Blaze Show. And you find me on Twitter at Ricky Rayberg. So I think that's pretty much gonna do it for this show. This is the end of part one. SummerSlam 1993. We'll come back with SummerSlam part two. Finish off the rest of this show. I know we still got the main event, Yokozuna versus Lex Luger. So that should be I would hope it's gonna be a good one. We'll see. I don't know if it'll top any of the matches we've already seen so far. Should be good. So this has been the Rage and Blaze Show. I'm Rage.
And I'm Blaze.
And good night from Rage's Pit.
And here is your winners, and still podcast tag team champions of the world, the Rage and Blaze Show. Thank you for listening.